We have an interesting vanity license plate to start this podcast with today. It's Today in Ohio, the news podcast discussion from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. I'm Chris Quinn here with Lisa Garvin and Laura Johnston. We're going with three today. And Laura, you start. Did Ohio reject the vanity license plate because it involved not so veiled messages, including a profane one about President Joe Biden?
Yes, because the Ohio Department of Transportation, or sorry, the BMV, is responsible for looking at all of these requests that come in for vanity license plate and going over them. And this is just people, this isn't a computer, going, how could this be obscene or defamatory or insulting to anyone? And we need to not allow this combination of letters and numbers. So what we're talking about is the plate F46LGB. This was a rejected license plate. And they claim, the lawsuit claims, there's no objective meaning to this. And it was wrong for the Ohio Bureau of Motor Vehicles to reject it. But if you could look at this, you could look at it as F, the word that starts with F. 46 is the 46th president. And LGB would be Let's Go Brandon, which is kind of a code word or code phrase among conservatives for F Joe Biden. And this came about in October of 2021 during a NASCAR, well, at least it was a car race. I'm not sure it was NASCAR, but when people were chanting and it was on TV and what was like, what were they saying? And they're like, maybe it's Let's Go Brandon because Brandon won. But really they were yelling F Joe Biden. So that's the backstory there. It's an 18-page lawsuit. It doesn't say what this guy had in mind when he requested the phrase, but he says he should get to have it and they should be paying for court costs.
Yeah, he's out of his mind. He's going to lose. Look, I think that they're probably on alert for anything that starts with F.
Yeah,
anything is automatically going to be, okay, what are you trying to say here? And there's no way he's going to win. I mean, they reject license plates all the time for either obscene messages or this kind of thing. And there's no way he can argue that these are random letters and numbers. It is clear what he was trying to do. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why he sued. I mean, I guess just to make a stink and, you know, look like a valiant Trumpster or something. But this is going to be a nuisance lawsuit that's thrown out. And, when you first looked at it, when you first saw what it was, did you know what it was? Did you automatically go,
no.
Oh, F46, I know what that is. I looked at it for a minute thinking, why did they reject this? And then, when you put the F together, you go, oh, that's what it is.
Right. It wasn't an automatic one. Some of them, like IH8GOP, which would be I hate GOP, or FUTRMP, which would be F, and Trump. So it's not as obvious as some of those. It would have taken a little bit. I think it would have gone over the heads of probably at least half of motorists on the road, but that doesn't matter. The rules are the rules. We do not want to grant state-approved license plates that are critical or mean about anything. But obviously, this is a really lightning rod issue here.
I'm sure that anybody who requests anything starting with F gets an automatic deep look at what could mm-hmm. this mean, because they're just not going to allow you to get away with that. Every once in a while, something really hard to decipher does get through, but I imagine that anything that starts with F automatically is not going to make it if it's got any hidden meaning.
Can you imagine being on part of this BMV employee panel that looks at all the vanity plate requests every year? They use websites like Urban Dictionary as their resource to keep up with these ever-changing slang terms, because actually, I'm writing a column about slang, and it is crazy the stuff that I've never heard these words, but the kids are using them, right? So you have to be constantly on the lookout for new ways to insult people.
Well, you forget our commenters. When we had comments on our site, we had all sorts of rules. They were always figuring out tricks to get past the filters and use code words and things. It's a game, but the license plate, it puts the imprimatur of officialness on it.
Well, and the Let's Go Brandon thing, honestly, I'd heard it. I didn't know the backstory of it. And that is itself a fascinating story.
Oh, yeah. No, that's been that's been out there for a while.
I know it's been out there, but like I hadn't delved into it. And so, it's a code, people are communicating in their own way.
You're listening to Today in Ohio. Speaking of the president, has concrete action finally been taken to make sure that Joe Biden appears on the Ohio ballot, as Democratic voters made clear they desired in the Ohio primary? Lisa.
Today, the Ohio House is going to vote today on revisions to Senate Bill 92, which would ease the 90-day deadline to certify presidential candidates for the November ballot. This will allow political parties to submit their candidates up to 74 days before the election, which would be August 23rd, that would be the deadline, or 3 days after the presidential ticket has been nominated, whichever is earlier. They also have several options to notify the Secretary of State about the certification via mail, hand delivery, email, fax, or commercial carrier. Frank LaRose says that lawmakers have until this Friday, though, to pass this bill so it can take effect before the original 90-day deadline kicks in, which is August 7th. Since new laws, once they're signed, they don't take effect for 90 days, so the clock is ticking. House Speaker Jason Stevens says they hope to resolve the issue without much fanfare. He's awaiting comment, or we are awaiting comment, from Senator Matt Huffman and the Senate Republican members. Huffman said, oh, it's a Democrat problem, then he changed his tune. House Minority Leader Allison Russo says they have a few more hoops to jump through, but she's glad for the bipartisan effort. And she says 74 days makes sense this year, but it's kind of an arbitrary deadline, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, they should change the law permanently, which is what Huffman talked about doing when he took a good look at it. It's good to see that they're working together to get this done, and it's not anything people need to be anxious about. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Some have dealt with college protests over the Israel-Hamas war with reserves. Some have dealt with protesters with militancy. What does Attorney General Dave Yost describe in his letter to colleges about one of the eventualities here, Laura?
I feel like Yost is really marching up some right-wing stairs with his recent decisions and letters. And every day he takes another step higher on the, oh, I had no idea kind of scale. So he wrote this letter to Ohio University president saying that college students who wear masks while protesting Gaza, or, you know, all of the pro-Palestine protests that we've had, they would violate this little known state law that would escalate a misdemeanor charge into a fourth degree felony. And that felony could carry penalties as much as 18 months in prison, $5,000 in fines, or up to 5 years in community control. And what the law comes from is from the 50s, an anti-Ku Klux Klan law that says no person shall unite with two or more others to commit a misdemeanor while wearing white caps, masks, or other disguise. So, I mean, that white caps really is clear about what this was about. And as far as the experts we talked to, they don't know anybody who's ever been prosecuted under this law or that it's been appealed. So we don't know that it's ever been used. And this would apply to anyone in any case, but the public schools receive the letters. Students at private schools like Oberlin could also face these charges.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand why he sent it, because he doesn't say in it, you should prosecute them under this law.
Right.
He just says they can be prosecuted under this law, and it's a preposterous law. It would not stand. If people are wearing religious garb that violates this law, it'd be a First Amendment case. And you could have used this law during the pandemic when everybody was wearing masks. Any two people that committed a crime together could have been charged under this law. It's ridiculous. It would never stand. So I don't understand what he's doing. I mean, he's basically alerting them to the possibility the law could be used, even though no one has ever used it that way. It was really aimed at the Ku Klux Klan, and it's not front of mind. Is he trying to get people to charge it that way because he wants to look like he's hard on the protesters without actually saying he thinks we should?
It does feel like a scare tactic. Like, look what we could do to you if you step out of line. So don't protest. Don't wear a mask.
But he has no ability to prosecute anybody as Attorney General. Those kind of crimes are all prosecuted locally. Look, it throws me. It's like, hey, you, this law has never been used for anything in history, but if you wanted to, you could use it to make it a felony to protest on your campus, which is ridiculous, right? They're protesting. This is a country where people are allowed to protest. We have a long history of protesting for noble causes. So I just don't get it. I think it's a dog whistle.
Can I play devil's advocate here for a minute? Why are you masking yourself at a protest? You're hiding your identity for some reason or another. Sometimes that means you're up to no good.
Sometimes it means that you don't want to have your job prospects be doomed. I mean, there was
You're showing solidarity with
Hold on. There was a story about this. There was a detailed story that talked to kids about why they're wearing masks. And they said, if I'm identified here because of this issue, I'm limiting my job prospects. I've got to go make an income. So they have a legitimate reason not to want their names out in the public sphere. That stuff is there forever. It's a whole right to be forgotten issue that once you do something once, it's not supposed to stick with you for the rest of time.
There's also the idea that they're showing solidarity, that they're wearing hijabs as part of their Islamic faith or unity with the Palestinian cause. I would like to know if Yost thinks this law should have been used when we're talking about January 6th. I mean, there's a lot of those protesters that were masked. And when it goes back to COVID, a lot of them weren't masked because that was what they were mad about, right? They were like, I'm not ever going to wear a mask. I'm never going to be vaccinated. But the whole thing is just absurd to throw this into the ring. This law was never intended to be used this way. And the scare tactic just seems like, you're right, a dog whistle. It just seems like, I'm Dave Yost. I want to be right wing.
But he never says in the letter why he's telling him. He just says, hey, you should be aware of this. And that's bizarre. I mean, if he wants to say, I recommend you charge it as a felony, that would be incredibly controversial. There are a lot of people who get very upset about that. The motive here throws me. What are you thinking? Because no prosecutor is going to do it. And if they did, it'll get tossed out on First Amendment reasons, which is what the experts had to say. One of the strangest things he's done, you're right, he's doing all sorts of dog whistle kind of stuff because he wants to win the Republican primary for governor. This one is bizarre. You're listening to Today in Ohio. What does House Speaker Jason Stevens say the chances are that the Browns will get satisfaction on that ridiculous proposal for the state to pay $600 million towards their pie-in-the-sky $2.4 billion stadium fantasy in Brook Park? Lisa.
Stevens says the chances are slim to none that they're going to get $600 million from the state for their $2.4 billion stadium. He says it's easy not to support a dome stadium when you don't have the money. He said he would rather offer financial help to sports teams by issuing bonds either through a municipality or other bonding authority. But he says that doesn't mean that taxpayers will pay for the Cleveland Stadium. He says then every Ohio professional team will want new digs with state money. Lawmakers at last month's meetings with the Cleveland Browns representatives said that it wasn't a specific funding request. It was just preliminary presentations of the new facility. And even if this money is approved, which is not likely, Governor DeWine would have to sign it into law. His spokesman, Dan Tierney, says, you know, they don't have any comment on any amount of state money until the team and the local governments reach an agreement on their contributions. The Browners are asking for $1.2 billion in public money or $500 million in public money to renovate the current stadium.
It's more of the duplicity in this whole thing to say that this wasn't a funding request. Of course, it was a funding request. You went down and presented it to the state legislature and said, we're looking for $600 million from the state, which was ridiculous. One, the state doesn't have the money. Two, it's not an appropriate use of state money if they did. Three, and everybody seems to know this except the Browns, the Bengals and the Reds are expecting an identical sum of money to whatever the Browns get and similar to what we got for Progressive Field. Everything about this is just strange. All along, they've been negotiating with the city of Cleveland because they want more money from the city of Cleveland. They want a 50-50 split, and the city doesn't have the money and is saying, no, we'll give you roughly a 40-60 split, maybe 35-70. And then this comes up. Oh, well, we'll go build it in Brook Park. And it just gets more and more ridiculous. I'm not at all surprised that Jason Stevens said slim and none. It's none. There is no money. And if they had that money and they spent it that way, taxpayers would be livid that they're spending that much money on a football stadium.
Yeah, Democrat Representative Bride Rose Sweeney of Westlake, she was front and center in these negotiations and talks with the Browns, and she says they want to make absolutely sure it makes sense for taxpayers and is a good deal, but as it sounds like, it's not a good deal. And, you know, I don't even know, have the Haslams even bought that property in Brook Park yet?
Yeah. No, so that's the thing. Art Modell tried to jack the city back in the day. He at least bought the land first to give it some sort of credibility. It's just one of those. The other thing is people keep having this dream of a dome, right? Well, we could get a Super Bowl or we could get the Final Four. You know how often a city like Cleveland would get those? You know, once a half century. We're not going to have a line of Super Bowls and Final Fours. And there aren't that many big events like that to justify it. The fantasy that's being portrayed for what this could do versus the reality, which we've been clearly reporting on, makes this whole thing just ridiculous. The only thing the taxpayers can afford is to upgrade the stadium that's down on the lake. If there's a dream for something bigger, the Haslams are going to have to pay for it. The taxpayers don't have the money.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wonder what the next step is. When do they start threatening to move the team out of Cleveland? That's, I think, one of the next steps on the process.
Well, the bigger danger is coming up very soon. There's capital money that's been earmarked, kind of, for the land bridge and all that stuff that the Haslams articulated at the beginning of this for how we could upgrade the lakefront. If we don't have any kind of clarity on what we're going to do, we're going to lose all that money and we'll have to wait 2 years to get into the funding round again. And I think that deadline is coming up in about a month and a half. So the clock is kind of ticking here. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Cleveland Mayor Justin Bibbs' administration keeps sinking deeper with the choice of a key public safety official who, as we discussed Monday, was involved in an ugly civil rights case in Washington and then lied in Cleveland about it. Laura, what do a couple of city council members have to say about the status of this?
They want him gone. And I have to say that Richard Starr's t-shirt that he wears that says "Who's Getting Fired" is getting a lot of use lately. So Richard Starr and Kevin Conwell called for the termination of Philip McHugh. That's the recently appointed senior advisor for public safety, who happens to be the college roommate of Mayor Justin Bibb. He makes $124,000 a year. So this is a big hire. And he's been under fire since March when he got the job because of this role he played in the civil rights case. He was a detective with the Washington, D.C. Police Department, and he worked on a case where two senior citizens were prosecuted, a Maryland couple in their 70s, over whether they had a gun. And there was never any proof that they had a gun. So there ended up being a lawsuit. But this later round centers on what we talked about Monday. And the explanation to our editorial board, which mirrored what he told city council, didn't actually match the statements he made under oath in his deposition about this aggressive investigation. So Starr's calling for legislation that would give city council a bigger say in senior level cabinet positions, similar to what the county council uses. And he says he needs to go immediately, but he is not the only one. The council president says he's hearing from others as well as citizens.
Yeah, I'm just not sure why they're continuing to stick with this guy at this point. The civil rights case is bad. The fact that he's the mayor's college roommate raises red flags right away. It's radioactive. So you got to dot every I, cross every T if you're going to hire him. And then for him to be peddling this false story about what happened, how do you stand by him? How do you have a ranking person in the public safety department with his history and with the honesty challenges? I just don't get it. And we're going to have another story coming up that gets into his involvement in drawing up the job description. This just gets worse and worse. So, and Kevin Conwell is one of the ones who talked to this guy. You know, this guy told Kevin Conwell the same story he told us, and now Kevin Conwell knows that that's not true. You're not going to get past that. You're going to have a city council now that is very suspicious of what's going on.
And this is a position that needs a lot of trust. It needs trust from the public. It needs trust from the police force. It needs trust from the city council and the mayor's office, because this is a city that's under a consent decree with its police department. We don't have enough officers. Everybody needs to be working together and be able to trust each other. And that's not possible when you have someone who blatantly lied to you.
Okay, you're listening to Today in Ohio. The Cleveland schools need a tax increase, but before they can put one on the ballot, they need to know exactly how much money they need. What key budgetary milestone did the district reach Tuesday to help come up with a tax rate for voters in November, Lisa?
CMSD reached a tentative agreement with the Cleveland Teachers Union on a new contract. The details will be revealed by the end of this week to the union and the Board of Education. They're expected to either approve or reject these agreements next week. The current contract expires on June 30th. Union President Sharon Obrensky says they aimed to show respect to union members while helping retain and recruit teachers with this agreement. And CMSD CEO Warren Morgan says they want to ensure stability and support union members, paraprofessionals, and nurses, and enhance the ability to provide quality education. So this comes, as we know, as we've reported extensively, that CMSD has plans to cut $168 million from their budget. And of course, they face the loss of $465 million in one-time COVID stimulus money. So they're really in a pickle, but it sounds like they really want to make a move to retain their teachers. So it'll be interesting to see what the figures are.
Yeah, we've been waiting for the announcement of the tax on the ballot, but you can't set your rate because you have to know what the teachers are going to cost for the next few years. So I think there was a lot of pressure to get this done, and thankfully they have. I expect we'll get an announcement on the tax rate very soon. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Cleveland loves stories about grocery stores, Laura, and we have a new national chain looking to set up shop here. Which one is it?
Yeah, this is one I've never heard of. Grocery Outlet Bargain Markets. I take that back. I only heard of it when Sean McDonald wrote about it in that Dave's Markets Place spot open in Cleveland Heights, which he's under consideration for that space. And when grocery stores come into a brand new market, they tend to open more than one store. And so they are officially opening one at Ridge Park Square in Parma, 26,000 square feet of what used to be a Bed Bath & Beyond, because we know those stores are all empty now. So it's nice to know that the big box will have something to fill it. And it's considered an extreme value retailer. So smaller grocery stores that offer deep discounts on brand name items, also fresh food and meat.
Yeah, this won't be the only one. They'll be opening multiples, and maybe one will be in that Dave's, as you mentioned. It's amazing how much competition there is in the grocery business around here.
Absolutely. This chain has more than 460 stores in the United States. Its only Ohio store is in Boardman near Youngstown. So it's interesting to me what this is going to look like, because an Aldi is a deep discount grocery store, but it's all mostly its own brand. So this is name brand. I don't know how it'll compare price-wise. I'm sure Sean McDonald will be able to dig into that with a saving you money column if you really are going to save money at a place called Grocery Outlet.
And like the story on the new cloth bags at Giant Eagle, this story was quite popular with our readers once it went up on our site yesterday.
Grocery stores, that is a cutthroat business, man. I mean, I am shocked, actually, because Kroger was real big down in Texas. Kroger is an Ohio-based grocery chain, but yet they're not in Northeast Ohio. I find that kind of interesting.
Yeah, they're all over Michigan, but they're not here.
Yeah, I think the Giant Eagle and Heinen's together has made this a really formidable market for anyone else to enter. So we'll see.
You're listening to Today in Ohio. Steve Litt wrote recently about the need to replenish Cleveland's tree canopy, and that happens one sapling at a time. Lisa, how does Old Brooklyn's Tree Steward Program help meet the goal?
Yeah, this program, it's pretty cool. It was launched last year. It's the brainchild of community health coordinator for the Old Brooklyn CDC, Hope Fierro. She believes it's the first of its kind in Cleveland, and it has been replicated in other communities now. So stewards from the community are trained by the Western Reserve Land Conservancy and Holden Forests and Gardens. And so they learn how to plant and care for trees. They work about 25 hours a month. They care for recently planted trees in public areas. They also go to assess residential properties and see what their tree needs might be, and they hold workshops. And Fierro says she was really really surprised at how enthusiastic residents were about planting trees in their yards and neighbors' yards, and these stewards have a lot of passion. They helped plant 66 trees so far in Low Park, including about a half a dozen pin oaks that they planted just this last weekend. And these are big Ohio native trees that grow to 70 feet or more, and they're very tough trees. So in conjunction with the Tree Steward Program, the Old Brooklyn started a tree planting program in 2021. They got support from the County Planning Commission and the Cleveland Tree Coalition. And this was their way to fight back against the encroaching loss of the tree canopy in our area. We used to be called the Forest City. Cleveland loses about 75 acres of tree cover every year, mostly in poor neighborhoods. In the 1900s, the tree cover was 94%. It's only 18% today. So the fact that not only are they planting trees, they've got people watching and taking care of these trees, which is really important.
Well, as I'm coming out of, I hope, my miserable time of the year for pollen, I hope they're focusing on trees other than oaks, just personally for me. You're listening to Today in Ohio. That's it for the Wednesday episode. Thanks, Loisa. Thanks, Laura. Layla should be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening.